myself a look. I'm at the corner just in time to see the bus fly by. It's all right, cause I'm safe at the bell.
Oh, yes. We know that theme song. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest has written a memoir called I Was Saved by the Bell, Stories of Life, Love, and Dreams That Do Come True. Peter Engel is a longtime television producer, created one of the most iconic teen sitcoms of all time, Saved by the Bell. The show, of course, was wildly successful, syndicated in 85 countries. For Engel, the show was more than just work, though. It was family, and it was his most inspiring project to date. The book gives you a behind-the-scenes look at Bayside High, but also chronicles the ups and downs of a producing career in television. For every hit, there are several near misses. Jobs, relationships, addictions, and finding religion all play a part in this great story, the story of Peter Engel, and he is in studio with me tonight. Peter Engel, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Justin, I love Chicago. Go Cubs!
You got it.
In L.A., everyone was rooting for the Cubs. There was one guy who actually worked on Saved by the Bell, one of my head writers. He was from Cleveland. He was the only guy
for the Cubs. Well, I'm interested in, I mean, we're going to talk about, you got a big Q&A and book signing discussion that's going to be at Saved by the Max in Wicker Park. We'll talk about that. It's going to be Friday morning. But I'm interested in your story, because this book, you know, it's I Was Saved by the Bell, so automatically you think it's just going to be a story about that great sitcom that changed teen sitcoms forever. But it's not. It's really a story about you and your career in television and Hollywood, which you almost didn't go into. You chose textiles at the beginning of your career. Tell us about that.
Because I didn't want anyone to make fun of me that you'll never make it. And that's part of the dream. That's part of the journey. That's the book is about the journey. It's about how you got to keep hoping and loving and caring. I had a dream when I was 12 years old. I fell in love with television. We had one of the first televisions in our neighborhood, west side of Manhattan. And I fell in love that first night with the Milton Berle variety show. And this is what I want to do. I want to do. But who was I going to tell that to? My father was in the textile, the children's wear business. So I even went to NC State in the 50s, which was pretty dangerous territory for a Jew from New York.
From Manhattan, right.
To go to textile school, because I wasn't, I didn't have enough confidence to say, I want to go to film school. But I was only there for a moment of maybe less a year. Mm-hmm. And then I transferred to NYU film school, but I told my parents I was going to law school, and it was a much better law school,
sort of law
at
school,
NYU
right?
than it was in North Carolina. Right. They bought that.
Well, you had, I mean, that's a fun part of your story, but you really did have access to television, because New York City at the time, and still is, but I mean, you could work for The Tonight Show, you could, you can intern,
well,
you could get involved.
Go ahead. Yeah. I was in school, and I was my junior year, and I'm not going fast enough. And I was a very shy guy, not the big mouth I am, confident guy today. I was very shy. Even in my own home, I was kind of snuck past people, my parents. And I was at NYU, and all my parents' friends said, we know someone at NBC. Mr. Bea Page, it was NBC, 30 Rock. Not ABC, not CBS, 30 Rock. And I one day dashed out of class, as you read in the book, took the subway up to 30 Rock, and I ended up doing that for 2 years, and barged in, I want to be a page. And they say, we only take applications by mail. We have 14,000 applications. We take 7, not 8, not 12, 7. I said, well, then I'm the first one here, which was just was so out of character for me. That wasn't me. I was a shy kid unless I was in a comfort zone. Right.
Well, I don't want to jump around because, you know, but, you know,
and
for the sake
the
of time, you got the job.
I got the job, and I would go every day from NYU up to 30 Rock.
As you continued in your career, and there's great stories in the book about producing, about working with different celebrities, not just in sitcoms, but Jacques Cousteau, Ice Capades. You produced Ice Capades. There's a lot of great stuff.
One of my wives was a star.
That's right. But what I really enjoyed about the book was the temperament that's needed to be a producer. And you talk about this a little bit. There's one passage in the book where you talk about you were having an off day and because of relationships, and you came in and you didn't sell a project in the right way. And it kind of reminded me that there is a little bit of salesmanship when
Absolutely.
It comes to being a producer, trying to get things done in Hollywood.
The first prologue in the book, we only had 7 Saved by the Bells. And we're going to be off, on and off in 7 weeks. We'll be mixed in with a bunch of losers and pilots and foreign imports. And I knew that from the audience, which we weren't even on the air, that we had something special. These kids were magic. And girls were screaming. It was like a Beatle concert, even though we weren't on the air. We would bus in high school students.
This was in the pilot phase. There was not even a TV show yet.
No, we just had done 7.
Yeah, right.
And I went to Brandon Tartikoff's office, whose idea was for us to do live television. And we didn't know if anyone would see us, because we had our lead-in with Chipmunks, and our lead-out was Smurfs. We were against a rabbit, a bear, and a raisin. And I went to the office and said, I need 13 more. So you could repeat them 2.5, and we'd have 52 weeks. Otherwise, we're going to die. You've been to the tapings. He said, you're not getting any more. And with him, and he was the guy who brought me to NBC. That's it. And the conversation was over. And I was desperate. I said, Brandon, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to lie down on your floor, and I'm going to stay here. And you have two choices, to give me 13 or to call security and have me taken out in shackles. And he goes, very funny. And I lie down on the floor, and he picked up the phone and said, get me Dick Wolf. And he talked to him, 13 to call security. He made phone calls every time. Finally, he said, okay, you got your 13. Now, people
and that's
say
how
to me,
TV's
was
done.
That your plan B? I said, no, I thought he was going to agree with me. But, Justin, if I didn't do that, Saved by the Bell would have been on and off in 7 weeks.
Because you know that about the business. Part of it's about the experience of understanding how it
special.
Works.
I wouldn't do this.
For every project you've worked
if
on.
If I didn't really believe, and he believed, and he said, all right, you got your 13, I got out of my office.
Let's talk more about Saved by the Bell and some other facets of the legendary career of Peter Engel, the executive producer, the former executive producer of Saved by the Bell. He's got a new memoir, I Was Saved by the Bell, Stories of Life, Love, and Dreams That Do Come True. He is going to be live at Saved by the Max, the restaurant on North Avenue in Wicker Park, on Friday morning, 11 o'clock, for a book signing and discussion, a Q&A. We have some giveaways for that. We'll do that right after
the
interview.
Well, come see me.
And to come see Peter Engel. I want to go.
Go to savedbythemax.com to make sure you get in.
There you go. All right. We'll continue. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue the conversation with Peter Engel. Stay with us.
Thought we'd always be together. I was sure our love would last. Here I am, all alone, wondering what went wrong. Did we ever have a chance?
That song, that's a Zach Attack. Zach Morris Band from Saved by the Bell. We're talking with the former executive producer, Peter Engel, tonight. His memoir is out, I Was Saved by the Bell, Stories of Life, Love, and Dreams That Do Come True. He's going to be signing copies and doing a Q&A at Saved by the Max, which is the pop-up restaurant here in Chicago on North Avenue in Wicker Park. He'll be doing that Friday morning at 11 o'clock. We're going to give away a couple of passes to that coming up here in just a couple minutes. It's so interesting because, as I mentioned in the lead, Saved by the Bell, huge success. Now, I mean, as you mentioned, you're going up against cartoons, you're going up against the Smurfs, and or all the other things that are on the different networks. And at a certain point, Saved by the Bell became not only the winner just with teens, but it became the winner on Saturday mornings. And it's created a whole new genre.
It did.
I mean, talk about that. Talk about that. I mean, there weren't teenage sitcoms like this before.
There wasn't teenage sitcoms. There was Disney Channel was doing much younger. As a matter of fact, three of my guys who had started me as young kids out of college and ended up being producers and writers went over and were the creating guys on Miley Cyrus.
Which is
and
really,
then on
yeah.
Wizard of Waverly and the Selena Gomez Show. And they were my boys, and they graduated from Peter Engel Productions and NBC to Disney. But we really hit a nerve that no one else had. And, of course, I didn't want to do it. I said, get someone else.
Why did you not want to do it?
Because I thought you only could have a hit in prime time. I wanted to be, I wanted to have a prime time car.
Because in Hollywood, in television,
Norman Lear. I
there's
to be,
pride involved, right? I mean, the idea of getting that.
Yeah. Also. What do you mean? Oh, my gosh. Saved by the Bell is one of the biggest hits in the history of television. No sitcom, no comedy, Justin, had ever gone through. Action shows did go to many countries, but comedy never went to but the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. But this went to 85 countries, which is unbelievable. And the key was that every kid goes to school somewhere. And when we found that out, we played up to everyone know how the California kids went to school. And I went to such ends, like in Zach's room, that wall, Magic Johnson, that over there, Laker Girl posters, skateboard, ski, surfboard.
Right, right.
And we really went all the way on that.
In the book, you talk about a lot of other shows. You talk about the success of the show and what sets it apart, and you really do talk about the chemistry of the cast.
Right,
I mean, these kids were what really sets this apart.
Right. They were just magical. And it was amazing. But again, I never knew if we'd find our way in that landscape. But they were magic. They were the Yankees when the Yankees were the Yankees, or the Cubs are today. That's who they were. There was just something magical about them, their chemistry. And you can't produce that. You can cast it, you can write it, but it's there or it's not. And when it's right, there's no other person in the world who could be Screech. There's no other person in the world who could be Slater. There's no other person who could be Kelly Kapowski.
Right.
And that's when you know. And there are other shows I've done where I knew that we didn't have it. But it became commerce. What am I going to do with all these people? They need jobs. I can't let, you know. At one point, we had 1,600 people working for us, and we had 6 shows shooting every single week. And it became commerce instead of, and I got a big arrogant. I did a couple of shows I shouldn't have done. And
one right here in the Tribune.
Right here.
Malibu Keller.
And when you lose $25 million for your partners, NBC and Tribune, all of a sudden you're not so hot anymore.
But there's something in that. That's the business. You did. I'm interested in this because, you know, in this book, and again, it's got great stories about the cast and about Saved by the Bell and the process of putting that show together. But it also is this a great story about dealing with adversity and also dealing with rejection. Because in the television business, for every project that you feel is the one, there are 3 others that didn't make it.
Or more. I mean, come on, they make 40 pilots and put 4 on maybe, or maybe put 5 on and then... Maybe one of those makes it. I mean, our biggest failure ran 52 episodes, which in today that would be a major hit,
right? Right.
In the marginalization of what it is, but your heart gets broken 1,000,000 times. I did a show in the 1977 called Sirota's Court, which was a very socially heavy comedy. In fact, the New York Times said that Sirota's Court would have been psychologically disturbing if it wasn't so outrageously funny, which is what we were going for. We did a gay wedding in 1977 and couldn't understand why the show just drifted away. I mean, I wasn't very important then. I mean, I wasn't like a David Kelly or like a Chuck Lorre.
But this was your passion. That
was
my passion.
My heart was broken. We did 19 episodes and it never got canceled, just kind of faded away. And it broke my heart. And it probably broke up my marriage at the time because I was so intent on getting that hit. But you know something? It's how you come off the mat. Everyone's going to get knocked down. Even when we had the height of my success, when we had 6 shows, you still went out and got rejected more times than, I mean, we had gone out with a lot of shows before Last Comic, you know, mm-hmm. and for every one that made it, 6 pitches didn't.
Well, I mean, we could go on and talk about your transition to reality shows with Last Comic Standing. We could talk about your history. I mean, there's great stories in this book. We'll keep it for the book. I am interested in wrapping up talking about the morality of a show like Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
One of the things I'm so fascinated by was the idea that this was a show that was wholesome for a new genre, and the genre of tweens. This was something that wasn't...
And teens.
But this was something that... I mean, did you recognize how... I don't want to use the word careful, but how the writing and the production, everything in between, had to be almost morality or...
We told morality.
Yeah, it had to be. Yeah, you're selling it in a way.
And we were. And no one had ever measured that audience. It had been 2-6 and 7-14. And all the research guys said, it's going to die, it's going to die. And I heard Brandon yelling at him. If it wasn't for, on the phone, if it wasn't, right. if it was, if I listened to you, I wouldn't have put on Cheers. I wouldn't have put on Cosby. I wouldn't have put on Ella. I wouldn't have put on Hill Street Blues. And I said, what's wrong? He said, they're predicting doom. And I said, very blithely, well, they've had a lot of experience with doom. And but we tell morality tales. Because if you don't do something wrong, there's no morality tale. But the difference was it wasn't parent involvement or intervention. Right. It was themselves.
It's the beauty of Zach Morris. Yeah.
They always did the right thing in the end. But we took on some things. We did the oil. We did oil spillage. They've discovered oil at base. Well, the truth that was based on truth that at Beverly Hills has the lowest, most expensive, but the lowest tax rate. Because there's oil on Beverly Hills High School land.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the property taxes are much lower. Most people don't, but the derrick is still there coming up on Beverly Hills. So I said, what if we found oil in Bayside? And no one wanted, none of the writers wanted to do it. And I wrote 11. I don't think I wrote the oil spill, but the point was, and I insisted, there's a story here. And it was. And the scene where Zach in that show, there's a model of what the school is going to look like. But there's an oil spill. It kills the little ducks that they were in the biology class.
You look back on this, I mean, obviously writing.
And we did that in 1992. And it was done in Promised Land with Matt Damon and John Krasinski.
Right.
The same scene 4 years ago where they took the oil can and they squirted the model.
They're stealing your work.
Yeah, but that's okay. But the point is, we took on some subjects that we didn't think had been taken on before. And since there was no tween and teen programming, we didn't really have a yardstick to go by.
You know, as you write the memoir, as you know, stories of love, of life, love, and dreams that do come true, and you think about what Saved by the Bell means to you, what are the emotions that come up? I mean, is this the dream that came true?
Yes. And a dream that I dreamt, it came up in the most unusual way in an area I didn't even want to be involved in. And it was a dream come true. And as I know you probably know Dirty Dancing, as Baby said to Johnny in Dirty Dancing, I had the time of my life. It was a ball. It's comedy supposed to be fun. It was the best time. We went to Hawaii. It was like a whole family going. We went to the beach club, and I live right above where we shot those now, right at Santa Monica. It was a marvelous time, and it was fun, and it was the best thing, except for my children, that ever happened in my life.
Peter Engel is the executive producer of Saved by the Bell. He's got a new memoir, I Was Saved by the Bell, Stories of Life, Love, and Dreams That Do Come True. On Friday morning, he's going to be signing books and doing a Q&A at Saved by the Max, the pop-up restaurant in Wicker Park. We've got two. This, it costs $40. It comes with some food and be able to buy the book.
You get the book. And I'll autograph it.
SavedByTheMax.com. But also, we're going to give away two. Let's do the 15th and 16th caller at 312-981-7200. Giving away two pairs of two coming up.
That's four.
312-981-7200. The 15th and 16th callers can get passes to Saved by the Max this Friday morning. Peter Engel, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
I had a great time.